Chapter 14. The Year of the Dracaraj. Dale Reckoning, 1018. City of Shimmering Webs. For 5-10 days, a dozen small wagons and carts bounced along the lightless tunnels of the Underdark, pulled by large lizards. In the middle of the line, goblin drivers managed a group of the common cattle, Rothay, while the cows stood and lowed on a floating floor, hemmed in by fences of lightning energy. The magical designs of that cattle cart were quite interesting and powerful, and surely such an item would have been coveted by many in the Underdark, including the mining dwarves and even the mushroom myconids for their great stalk harvests. Few, though, would dare to try to take it, for veteran drow scouts flanked the caravan and trailed it, outfitted with fabulous armor and weapons. Word went out before the caravan that it had been sanctioned by a great house of Menzoberranzan, with the full protection of the city's ruling council. To attack this train was to go to war with Menzoberranzan. The three dark elves in the party who were most capable of such scouting and guarding, the three who would be avoided by anyone thinking them enemies, did not participate in the mundane duties of the caravan, however. Instead, Jarlaxle, Zaknafane Doerden, and Arathas Hune kept to themselves, usually in the covered cargo hold of the one cart driven and guarded by Bragandyearth operatives. The last cart in the caravan line. "Matron Shiva Zovir," Jarlaxle revealed at one quiet meeting of the three. He produced a drawing of the woman, a strong and sturdy priestess with her wavy hair dyed blue, except for a tight bun on one side of her head that was left the more natural white. Her red eyes shone all the more because of the glowing ruby she had pierced into the side of her nose. "Quite attractive," Arathas remarked, clearly impressed. "And easy to find," Zaknafane added in very different tones, ones that did not hint at carnal desire. For Zaknafane, Jarlaxle knew, felt that drow Lothian priestesses were most visually pleasing when they were dead. "Wait," Arathas added, seeming suddenly perplexed. "Zovir? The trading family?" "Black Claw Mercantile," Jarlaxle confirmed. "They are friends of House Baenri," Arathas Hune replied, seeming alarmed or at least surprised. "They will be again," Jarlaxle assured him, "when the error is corrected." "And that error is this Matron Shiva creature?" Zaknafane asked. "She bent to ambition and overplayed her position," the mercenary band's leader replied. "She spoke ill of Matron Mother Baenri to a handmaiden of Lolf, a dutiful creature who, of course, was quick to report the transgression back to Matron Mother Baenri. Matron Shiva is trying to find a bit of independence, perhaps. Her reasons do not matter and are not our concern. All we need know is the task before us, put to us by the Matron Mother of Menzoberranzan. She is the head, we are just her hands, albeit ones holding weapons. It is just business." "None here believe that such a dispassionate and logical view of murder infects all three of us," Arathas Hune remarked dryly. Jarlaxle smirked and looked to Zaknafane. "Allow me my delusions," Zaknafane scolded Arathas Hune. The rogue laughed at the new Bragandyearth warrior. "You would choose to believe that this is an edict for murder from Lady Loth herself? I have never known of you to be so sacrosanct, warrior." "Sacrosanct?" Jarlaxle asked with a snicker. "Do tell us your delusion, good Zaknafane." The Doerden weapon master shrugged. "That I may find peaceful reverie. I convince myself that there are a finite number of them, and that another one killed brings me closer." "Them?" Arathas asked. "Matrons and priestesses," Jarlaxle answered, before Zaknafane could. "And when he says closer?" "The ultimate Zaknafane fantasy," Jarlaxle replied, "that he would kill them all, right to and right through Matron Mother Baenri." Arathas Hune chortled and turned to Zaknafane. "Everyone needs a hobby," the weapon master said with a shrug. The cart hit a bump in the rocky corridor as he spoke, and all three heads involuntarily bobbed, as if in agreement. Backed by the reputation of the Dark Elves and the obvious power guarding the caravan, they encountered little trouble even in the open Underdark. One scout did get injured by an Umber Hulk, but the monster was quickly dispatched, and displacer beasts were run off on two separate occasions. By Underdark standards, all of that counted as uneventful. So as they neared the middle of the seventh 10-day out from Menzo Berenzon, the caravan came to smoother tunnels, well-worked and swept of loose stones, with several intersections clearly marked by fairy fire signposts, pointing the way for those who knew how to read the drow codes and separate the truth from the diversions. "You have never been out of Menzo Berenzon, then?" Jarlaxle asked Zaknafane, the two sitting up beside the cart driver. "Many times." "Truly?" "Not far," Zaknafane explained. "The adjoining tunnels only. House Simfrey was ambitious and wanted to explore the possibilities of becoming an extra Menzo Berenzon in trading party." "That is always the way, isn't it?" Jarlaxle mused with a chuckle. "When the path to any real ascension is blocked, the ambitious look beyond the immediate walls." "Like Jarlaxle?" The mercenary leader brought two fingers to his forehead in salute at the observation. "Someday I will look outside the City of Spiders, even more than this, likely," Jarlaxle confirmed. "For now, however, there is plenty of room for Bragandyearth to grow within the cavern of Menzo Berenzon. I see great strife among the noble families in the near future, with many lesser houses trying to capitalize on the confusion. And from great strife, Jarlaxle finds gain. As do we all. But someday, perhaps, you will move beyond the cavern, beyond the immediate reach of the Matron Mother and her ruling council," Zaknafane reasoned. "Perhaps. But it is nothing I care to even discuss," Jarlaxle replied. "I am quite content right now, my friend, and I see a path of tremendous luxury. We are safe in our caverns beneath the Claw Rift, and protected by the most powerful house in the city. One more powerful than any other two houses, perhaps even any other three houses combined. So I am more than glad to serve Matron Mother Bayenry." "But not Lolf?" Jarlaxle's fingers flashed his response, trying to silence his brash companion. Matron Mother Bayenry surely knew the truth of Jarlaxle, that he was not a loyal follower of the Spider Queen, or of anyone for that matter. But to have such information out in the open would not serve him well in his dealings with the merciless Ivanel Bayenry. "Let me prepare you for Ched Nassad," Jarlaxle said aloud, changing the subject. "It is quite unlike Menzo Berenzon, and spectacularly so." Zaknafane stared at him hard. "Not here," Jarlaxle's hand signed to the weapon master. "I have heard that the design and construction of the City of Webs are truly inspired," Zaknafane said, rather loudly, perhaps too loudly, Jarlaxle thought, as was typical of people not used to weaving such deflections or lies. "Words can do it no justice," Jarlaxle pointed far up ahead to a shimmering wave of fairy fire set on the corridor wall, indicating a sharp turn. "You will see in a moment." The caravan paused when the first cart rounded that bend, then paused again with each subsequent cart, the drivers and riders taking a moment to soak in the grand scope of the city before them. Zaknafane watched it curiously, quickly coming to realize from the expressions of those turning the bend that Jarlaxle had not been exaggerating. For all of that, though, the House Doerden weapon master was still not prepared for the vision when at last his cart turned the corner to show Ched Nassad spread before him. It was built in a grotto, a vast V-shaped cavern with steep walls climbing thousands of feet. Called the City of Webs, or more formally and regally, the City of Shimmering Webs, Ched Nassad certainly lived up to that moniker. In Menzo Berenzon, most of the drow houses were built within gigantic stalagmites and stalactites, with a few, like House Doerden, set into caves in the wall. But in this city, almost all of the houses were a combination of cave and petrified webbing. Some of the chambers were formed of multi-channeled giant web cocoons. Those webs, endless webs, lined the whole of the place, climbing the walls, with web bridges spanning the various cavern levels. And not just thick gray webs, but webs glowing in fairy fire, purple and blue, amber and green, even yellow, and ever-changing, ever-shifting, climbing and descending, a cascade of colors that seemed almost alive. The sound of rushing water created a background hum that only added to the strangeness of the place, and so attuned with the magical lighting and strange construction that it took Zacnaphane a long while to even notice the sound at all. "We'll be climbing quite high," Jarlaxle explained. "Chedna Sod's Kelarxoral is up away from the stink of the refuse and the goblin slaves who tend the Rothay herd and farm the fungi and lichen on the cavern floor."
"The noble houses?" Jarlaxle nodded. "Our mark is a noble matron?" Zacnaphane's fingers asked, and Jarlaxle couldn't tell if his companion was hoping for that or not.
"No," he said. Zacnaphane's crestfallen look became obvious. "But not far removed. Matron Mother Bayenri demanded that I inform one ally of our coming, just one."
"You keep calling her by her title, and with apparent reverence. I am not used to that from you."
Zacnaphane felt the flick of a finger against his back, and he turned halfway around in his seat.
"You are surrounded by House Bayenri agents." Arathisune's fingers flashed from behind Jarlaxle, in the back of the cart and down low.
Zacnaphane's expression soured at that, but he nodded his understanding. "Secure our lodging," Jarlaxle told Arathisune.
"Under what name?"
"House Hunsrin, of course," Jarlaxle explained. "We have brought a handful of bull Rothays to improve the health of the Chedna Sod herd, and will take some of their bulls back to Menzo Baranzon, so that our herd becomes less an orgy of brothers and sisters."
"I wondered why we brought the smelly things along," Arathisune said with a chuckle. "I had hoped we might slaughter them for steaks along the way."
"That would not have been wise."
"Still, I cannot believe that the Hunsrins let their most valuable floating barge depart Menzo Baranzon for half a year."
"I could say the same for Matron Doerden and her preferred bull," Jarlaxle teased. "But as with Matron Malice, the Hunsrins were not given much of a choice in the matter."
"Matron Mother Bayenri really wants this particular creature dead," Arathisune said.
"The Matron Mother does not take insult lightly, and really, arranging for such things gives her something to do to pass the hours, and at no great cost by Bayenri measures."
The caravan rolled up to a huge side cavern that served as a grand stable for the city. And while the drivers and scouts went about the task of securing their wares, Jarlaxle and his companions moved out for their respective tasks. As beautiful as the shimmering webs were, Zacnaphane found them even more amazing when he and Jarlaxle began their climb, for the web ramps grabbed at his feet, securing his every step even up nearly vertical walls, but magically let go their grasp at just the right moment as he lifted his foot, affording amazing traction without any hindrance whatsoever.
"I feel like a spider," Zacnaphane remarked to Jarlaxle as they scurried up higher on the side wall of the cavern.
"You please Loth with such words."
"Say that again and I'll please her by throwing you from this perch."
Jarlaxle looked back at him and grinned. "And you believe that I do not have a contingency plan for such an unexpected flight?" Zacnaphane could only sigh, return the grin, and shake his head. This was the fellow, after all, who kept a portable hole in his pouch. There was nothing unexpected in Jarlaxle's life as far as Zacnaphane had seen. He didn't know this strangest of dark elves very well, but the mere fact that Jarlaxle was surviving and apparently thriving in the brutally matriarchal Drow city told him all he needed to know about the mercenaries' preparedness and cleverness. They walked and climbed for a long while, moving near to the noble city houses that were scattered along the highest web balconies of the city. The open routes before them quickly became very limited, and scowling guards eyed them from every cocoon-like structure and from the cave openings at the back of the terraces.
"Why are we up here?" Zacnaphane's fingers flashed. "Didn't you say that Zovir was not a ruling house?"
"It's not," Jarlaxle signed back. He held up a small parchment, glanced at it, then looked all around, getting his bearings. He motioned toward a wide crack in the wall farther along and across the way, then led Zacnaphane to the nearest web bridge that they could cross. "House Nasadra,"
Jarlaxle explained as they approached the house that flanked the natural-looking tunnel in the cavern wall. They went behind some web walls, then through a maze of the opaque things, finally coming to an exit inside the wall crack they had seen from across the way.
Quite a far way in, too, for the lights of the city were distant and cast little illumination into this natural alley. Taking great care with every step, the duo moved along the uneven and descending narrow gorge, down and around several boulders and into a deeper gloom. Even with their exceptional drow dark vision, they had to feel their way as much as see it, carefully placing one foot in front of the other as they crept along. They came to a fork in the narrow trail and were greeted by some light as they neared, from glowworms crawling across the ceiling, casting a bluish glow. Jarlaxle pointed to the left fork, then motioned for Zacnaphane to lead. The glow intensified after a short distance, and the tunnel became an open room. Before they even saw the two dark silhouettes ahead of them, Jarlaxle and Zacnaphane realized they were not alone.
"That is far enough," came the voice of a woman.
"Matron Nasadra?" Jarlaxle asked, when the woman, along with another, came somewhat into view along the far wall, which was natural and uneven. The woman laughed.
"You think yourself important enough to warrant an audience with the great Nasadra?" she replied. "This is not Menzo Berenzon, mercenary."
"I was told to announce my arrival to Matron Nasadra."
"And you have come to the appointed place," the woman answered, "and found the emissary of Matron Nasadra. I am a priestess of House Nasadra, perhaps out of favor with my matron for some reason of which I am not aware, for she sent me here to meet you."
"Perhaps with some," Jarlaxle started to say, and Zacnaphane was caught off guard by the shakiness in the rogue's voice.
"Your arrival is announced," the woman harshly interrupted. "Be on your way."
"Matron Nasadra is in agreement with my—"
"Be on your way," the woman repeated, and she turned and melted into the shadows, her companion, another priestess, moving behind her.
They were quickly out of sight, but Jarlaxle offered a parting bow anyway before turning and going back the way he had come. He said not a word nor sign to Zacnaphane until they were out of the side tunnel and far down the cavern's walls once more.
"That was the first priestess of Nasadra, I am fairly certain," he explained to Zacnaphane.
"Onre. Quite a beautiful thing, and a dance worth taking."
Zacnaphane looked at him skeptically.
"She didn't seem much taken with Jarlaxle."
"Of course not. If I am correct, the woman beside her was Cyprina Zorvir, youngest daughter of the woman we were sent to teach."
He glanced around to make sure no others were nearby or paying them much heed.
"How Zorvir knows we are here?"
"Just the little one, I hope."
Zacnaphane stopped abruptly at that revelation and let Jarlaxle walk ahead. He stared at the mercenary curiously, feeling suddenly vulnerable and out of sorts.
"The shake in your voice," he said.
"Intentional," Jarlaxle replied without looking back. "House Nasadra is grooming Cyprina to eventually ascend. It is good for her to have some hope that her mother may overcome the likes of us, particularly if she, Cyprina, does not understand the truth of the darkness that has come for Matron Shiva. Perhaps Cyprina believes, even dares hope, that Matron Shiva will win out. When she does not, Cyprina will think less of her older siblings, who could not prevent disaster from the likes of two shaky-voiced males."
He kept walking until he realized that Zacnaphane wasn't following anymore. Then he turned on his heel to see his companion's confused expression.
"I suppose you believe that Unre Nasadra was truly scowling at me, at us?"
Jarlaxle flashed that grin and shook his head.
"My dear Zacnaphane, you are going to have to better learn to see through such obvious ruses, if you are ever to be of substantial value to me."
Zacnaphane continued to stare for a while, obviously replaying the events that had just occurred.
"Is nothing what it seems in the world of Jarlaxle?"
"If I am doing it right," the mercenary answered and started away.
"Even our friendship?"
The most unexpected question came from behind, and Jarlaxle spun about again.
"I do not deceive Arathis Hune," Jarlaxle said. "I do not deceive those I pull closest to my side in Bregan de Earth."
"And what does that mean for me?"
We'll learn soon enough, I expect.
Zaknafane didn't blink, but his hands went to his weapon hilts reflexively. Jarlaxle just smirked and turned away once more, leading Zaknafane across the middle levels of Chednasad to the inn where Arathis Hune waited.
"I'm not fond of your choice," Arathis Hune said, when Jarlaxle and Zaknafane joined him in the suite he had rented under the name of House Hunsrin. The room was well furnished with three comfortable beds, but the webbed ceiling hung very low, barely above the head of Jarlaxle, who was the tallest of the three.
"It was the best choice," Jarlaxle replied. "The innkeeper is a friend."
"You mean the dead guy out of the desk?"
said Zaknafane, who was standing at the door, holding it slightly ajar and looking out at the main area of the establishment.
"Prevere Barkle,"
Jarlaxle started to reply until the weight of Zaknafane's words hit him. The weapon master swung wide the door and leaped out, dodging a flare of fire as he did.
"Down!" Zaknafane yelled to his companions still in the room, and he dove, too, flying to the side of the open door, even as a magical fireball exploded within the apartment.
Zaknafane rolled right back to his feet, weapons in hands, as the drow wizard, his invisibility spell ended by the attack, came into view. Zaknafane was no veteran of battling wizards, but he had certainly killed more than a few priestesses in his years, and so he figured the tactics were much the same. Get in close. That would not prove easy, though, as a pair of swordsmen leaped from concealment, one from behind the desk, the other from behind a web screen over by the room's far corner, both rushing to block his way to the spellcaster, which meant he wasn't going to get to the wizard in time, and the drow was already casting another spell. Zaknafane cut left to intercept the man from the corner, but stopped short and snapped his right arm around, throwing his sword like a spear at the warrior coming the other way. That drow got his swords up together to deflect the missile, but it still clipped his shoulder, drawing a painful gash and putting him back on his heels. The other warrior came in hard, both swords stabbing, but with his left hand alone, the skilled weapon master blocked and parried. Even riposted with a sharp and true counter to defeat the attacker's forward push and even drive him back a step. Zaknafane used the moment to tug the whip from his belt. He brought it spinning up above his head, dropping back on his right foot to turn to face the newcomer. The mere action of the whip had that drow slowing, which was exactly what Zaknafane had counted on, as he half turned back and snapped the whip into the face of the spellcaster instead. The wizard's magical ward stopped the weapon from connecting, but the snap so near his eyes distracted him and interrupted his spell. And all the while, Zaknafane worked his left-hand blade, keeping the warrior drow at bay. The other was coming back again, though, and Zaknafane knew he had to retreat. He started back a step, but heard a heavy grunt and watched the incoming warrior lurch and stagger to the side. Most dark elves carried small-hand crossbows. Arathis Hune, though, kept a sizable one on his back, one that threw bolts that needed no poison to drop a foe, and he knew how to use it. The wounded drow staggered, a quarrel deep in his thigh. He grimaced and tried to straighten, but then began howling. Because the large bolt was poisoned anyway, Zaknafane realized, why not? He cracked the whip again at the wizard, though that one had already fallen back out of range. Unfazed, Zaknafane came around, still working the whip, and short snapped it to the side of his closer opponent's swords once and then again. "Get the wizard," he yelled to Arathis Hune. But even as he cried out, a line of fire raced behind him, not from the wizard, but at the wizard. A lightning bolt followed, then a flying blob of viscous goo that slammed the surprised wizard and drove him up against the wall, sticking him there. And another lightning bolt roared into the poor fellow, and Zaknafane understood then that Jarlaxle was outraged. He had never seen such a barrage from the mercenary. He figured that the innkeeper must have been a good friend, perhaps even a Bregan D'Earth agent. But when he glanced at Jarlaxle, he saw another possible reason. The mercenary's hair, what was left of it, was still smoking. Back beyond Jarlaxle, Arathis Hune had reloaded and was aiming, but toward the inn's door, where more assassins were coming on fast. No time now for games or subtlety. Zaknafane snapped the whip in the air above his foe's head, but only for effect, and to put it in line for his real attack. With great skill and dexterity, Zaknafane reached far forward with his right hand and swept the whip out to the left, deftly shortening the stroke to send it swinging over the twin swords he continued to parry. His opponent saw the trick and tried to retract, but Zaknafane was quicker with his tug.
He couldn't keep the swords engaged, of course, nor did he pull either from the drow warrior's grasp, but he tangled them just enough to pull them to his right while he slid past to the left. He could have killed that drow. Were it a priestess of Lolth, he surely would have. But instead he punched out with a sweeping left hook, slamming the fellow across the jaw with the ball pommel of his sword. The warrior staggered and went to one knee, and Zacnafane kept spinning and leaping, easily clearing the last cut of his opponent's freed blades. Down came Zacnafane from on high, the momentum of his drop and his spin adding power as he brought his hard boot into the warrior's face, laying him flat out on the floor. He kicked one of the swords away and stomped down hard on the drow's other wrist, then threw aside his cut whip, damaged by the blades it had entangled, and scooped up the freed weapon as his own. He saw the other warrior as he came around, the man leaning heavily against the wall, screaming in agony, clutching at his leg and, Zacnafane could tell, at his very consciousness. Behind the warrior, the wizard hung on the wall, looking more like a hunting trophy than a threat. The battle was far from won, though, for over at the entryway of the tavern another pair of drow warriors appeared, and as soon as Zacnafane and Arathis Yun, coming from the opposite wall, started for them, they parted and sent a line of powerful bugbears streaming into the fight. "Left flank," Zacnafane called to Jarlaxle. Zacnafane and Arathis Yun met the bugbear charge side by side, holding a line, but not near enough to the door, and so more of the brutes were pouring in, sweeping about to Zacnafane's left, threatening to flank the pair. And where was Jarlaxle? Something flittered past Zacnafane as he was forced to drop his left foot back to intercept a bugbear trying to rush past. He had no idea what Jarlaxle might be up to, if it was even Jarlaxle who had sent the strange missile. Whoever it was, it made no sense to him, because it wasn't some caltrop or magical burst. No, it was a feather, a huge, strange feather. Until it touched the ground, and then, so suddenly, it became a gigantic, flightless, thick-bodied, thick-legged, huge-clawed monstrosity. Zacnafane shied reflexively, as did the bugbear, or at least the bugbear tried. But the giant bird was quicker, and it pecked the goblinoid atop the head with its massive beak, a punishing blow that sent the bugbear straight to the floor, its eyes rolling, its skull shattered. The left flank secured, the giant bird leaped ahead fearlessly, hopping, raking with its murderous claws, batting its short, thick wings, and driving back the press of bugbears. A twist, a feint, a step back as if in retreat, and a sudden reversal led by a thrust dispatched the bugbear standing before Zacnafane, and a second, surprising stab with his right-hand blade went immediately over the falling monster and straight into the face of the one thinking to take its place. Beside Zacnafane, Arathis Yun dispatched his immediate opponent, but found himself facing a pair of replacements. "Jarlaxle," Zacnafane called again, for he was suddenly too engaged to help his flanked companion. Even as he called for the help, though, it seemed a moot point, for another pea of flame soared in through the door. "Break and flee," Jarlaxle shouted from somewhere behind, and with a fireball about to explode, neither Zacnafane or Arathis Yun was about to argue. As one, they turned to retreat, only to wonder where they could retreat to. The answer became apparent when they spied the magical hole thrown against the back wall by their companion, who was already diving out of the establishment. So went Arathis Yun, and so went Zacnafane, and so went a pursuing bugbear, but that one came through a flame as the fireball exploded within the inn, filling the common room with fire and the cries of bugbears and the shrieks of a flaming giant bird. A burst of flames came roaring out as well, but it was abruptly extinguished as Jarlaxle tugged his portable hole away from the wall, returning it to normal. And an instant later there came a heavy thud as another bugbear tried to charge out of the conflagration through the hole that was no longer there. "Do not let them escape," Jarlaxle said with a hiss, and that sound was telling to Zacnafane, who was already up and running around the side of the inn. He had never heard the mercenary leader so obviously upset. No time to consider that now, though, for on the other side of the small inn stood a drow wizard and her two guards, at ease and staring at the burning inn, clearly believing that their targets remained inside the killing flames. The looks on their faces when Zacnafane leaped around the edge of the structure into their midst brought a smile to the deadly weapon master's lips. The looks on their faces as his strike gracefully took the throat from the wizard, and his second sword swept past the nearest warrior to cut him across both wrists as he turned to react, were even more delightful. Zacnafane turned too, facing him, and his left hook took the man in the cheek, while he flipped his right-hand sword over and stabbed it straight behind him, catching the other leaping warrior by surprise right in the chest. Jarlaxle and Arathisune came running around the building at just that moment to find all three of the remaining drow defeated, the wizard rolling on the ground, grabbing tightly at her bleeding neck, the impaled warrior lying quite still, and the other holding his cut wrists as he knelt there unsteadily on one knee, his nose dripping blood. "Go get my feather," Jarlaxle told Zacnafane, moving past toward the fallen sorceress. At that same moment, Arathisune's sword tip settled against the back of the wounded warrior's neck. Zacnafane stepped back and stood up straight. With a glance around, he sheathed his swords and turned back for the burning structure, though it was more smolder than conflagration at that point, since much of the inn was constructed with thick but easily melted webbing. He moved to the door and kicked it, expecting it to fall in, but it caught on some strands of gooey webbing and toppled back outside instead, hitting the ground with a whoosh of sparks. In the main room, Zacnafane found some bugbears writhing but posing no threat. A quick scan, and he saw the smoldering carcass of the giant bird Jarlaxle had summoned. The only unburned feather that he found seemed hardly worth retrieving, looking more like a twig than a bird's plumage. He shrugged and picked it up, pocketing it, then moving to the wizard hanging on the wall. That drow was alive, most of the goo burned away, though enough remained to keep him aloft and his feet were still off the floor. The warrior shot by Arathisune had expired, though whether from the fireball or the poison, Zacnafane couldn't tell and didn't care. But the drow he had knocked out was still alive and just starting to stir. Jarlaxle walked into the room. "I count 2 dead drow, 7 dead bugbears, and 4 prisoners, including a wizard," he said. "And we are unscathed," Zacnafane replied. "An easy remark for you to make," Jarlaxle said, and patted his once again singed head, where most of his hair had burned away and much of his skin looked as though it had been caramelized. His subsequent growl made it clear that he was not amused. With a shrug, Zacnafane handed him the feather. "Your bird. Was that a bird?" "2," he explained. "Might be good eating, though." Jarlaxle took the feather stub and put on his wry grin once more. "It will grow back," he said. Zacnafane looked at the mercenary leader's pate and tried to appear encouraging. "Not the hair," Jarlaxle explained, "though I will see to that with a priestess when we return to Menzo Baranzon." "Perhaps the gods are trying to tell you something," Zacnafane quipped. "Every time I see you, your head is on fire." "Not the hair," Jarlaxle said again, in even and grim tones. "The feather, the bird. The feather will grow back, and so return to me my useful pet when I need it." Somehow, Zacnafane wasn't surprised. The man carried holes, grew giant birds from feathers, and acted as if the matron mothers worked for him. And perhaps, in Jarlaxle's mind, they did. It occurred to Zacnafane Dowerden then that it probably wasn't a good life decision to remain near this dangerous character. But he shook the notion away, more than willing to take the risks, because it was so much fun.